disperse immediately or you will be subject to arrest with now.
A boss ain't nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128 bit war, you play Nintendo on some shooter, so put the bridge down and feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, life. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't.
Welcome to This is America, June 29th, 2018. In Portland, DHS agents, aided by Portland police, gained access again to their facility yesterday morning. They made several arrests and removed a group of veterans that were blocking an exit. Standoffs commenced between occupiers and heavily armed DHS agents. Despite agents now having access to the building, though, the occupation continues and grows stronger by the day. In Tacoma, quote, "Camp was taken down last night without incident by protesters. Solidarity demo rallies will continue at 9 a.m. and at 9 p.m. until Sunday, June 1st, at which point there is already a scheduled protest taking place in front of the jail. Be sure to check out at Occupy Northwest Detention Center on Twitter for more updates." In L.A., the occupation continues with events and workshops happening daily. In New York, the occupation happening in Foley Square is growing. One poster on Twitter wrote, quote, "We are currently and officially set up in Foley Square to assist immigrants with medical, food, and legal needs. Any questions they might have and give them our full support. We are open 24 hours. Join us." In the working class neighborhood of Pilsen in Chicago, an anti-ICE demonstration took place with massive marches blocking streets. In New York, an anti-ICE demonstration was also organized outside of one's facility. Anti-ICE rallies this weekend are planned across the country. If there's not a group organizing to block within a larger march happening near you, here are some materials that you can pass out, found in our show notes with links. Good luck. Be sure to send IGD action reports and tag us on social media. And now we're going to play our interview with somebody out in Portland. Okay, we're joined here today with somebody that is in Portland. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, so I have been involved with the Occupy ICE Portland camp, not since the very beginning. That was more a small group of people who started the vigil, mm-hmm. which was on a Sunday, which turned into an overnight camp, which other people started to join.
Right. So just take us back to what all went down last morning. The DHS officer showed up. And we're hearing also local Portland police. What happened?
Yeah. So it was between about 5:30 and 6 in the morning yesterday, Thursday morning. And there was a lot of press stuff going out, not official press, but people posting on Twitter that a raid was happening. Because the camp had already been on high alert, what they've been calling code red, to warn people, to get vulnerable people out of the camp because they were anticipating a raid. And so everyone kind of thought, like, okay, this is it. This is going to be the moment. The raid is going to happen. But it turns out that's not really what it looks like. They did send extremely militarized DHS agents and Homeland Security investigations. So, yeah, like you're seeing these pictures that basically look like a military force with helmets, with cages over their face, with rifles and pistols and everything. DHS and HSI agents, along with Portland police, was also there after, you know, there had been a statement from the mayor, Ted Wheeler, that Portland police would not be assisting DHS or ICE, but they were there basically blocking traffic to the area. So Portland police were there assisting DHS against what had already been said by the mayor.
Right.
So what happened is, I believe about 9 people were arrested from the camp during this time in the morning that DHS cleared the front gate of the camp, which is actually the only part of the camp that was on their property, the gate where, like, the vans from ICE go in and out of the building. So they cleared the veterans camp in that area. It was all U.S. veterans that had occupied that area. They cleared that area out, and the rest of the camp is still there now.
Wow. So, I mean, I think we're kind of like, when you stop and think about it, like, these were DHS agents. I mean, most people probably have not seen, except on the internet, you know, armed. I mean, these people look like they're, you know, they're in a war. You know, they look like a lot like how in Ferguson they were just all geared up. You know, they've got like assault rifles. I mean, can you even tell who these people are? Do they have badge numbers or names on them?
No, you really can't tell who they are. There were also, maybe you've seen pictures from Twitter, there were also agents there who are all geared up, you know, like you say, like a combat personnel, you know, fighting a foreign war, basically. Yeah. Except, you know, in the U.S., which is sort of increasingly unsurprising, I think, since we've followed Ferguson and things like that. But there were also DHS agents there all geared up that had masks over their face, like skin-tight bandanas over their face and baseball caps hiding their eyes. So you knew that these people did not want to be identified.
Right, and some of them were wearing, like, America hats and like, Blue Lives Matter patches and stuff like that, almost kind of quasi, like, Three Percenters or Oath Keepers.
Right, yeah, so you do see that overlap with, I mean, I think DHS is very aware right now that public opinion of them is very low, that a lot of people do want to see families reunited, and they think it's ethically abhorrent what's going on. So I think that's why they're hiding their faces, you know, but maybe the America baseball caps and things like that are playing to the only audience who they have who might support them, such as the 3%.
Right. I mean, there's one post on Twitter, I think, that kind of sums it up. It's from Portland Resist. It says, and it's a gentleman, he's all decked out in tactical gear and he has sunglasses on. And it says, when asked if he was ready to shoot, he nodded. When asked if he cared about the children, he shook his head. And it's a gentleman carrying an assault rifle, blocking traffic. So I think the next thing a lot of people want to know about is, so the DHS is back in the building. Also, they had been engaging in kind of like a low level, war with y'all. Like, they put up a Hulk Hogan cardboard cutout with an ice uniform over it. And they were,
they've been doing weird stuff. Yes.
And we also heard that they were playing like weird songs at night, like Sleep with One Eye Open or something. And
yeah, it was just kind of belligerent dad rock type music. And, you know, putting up these things in the window, like the Hulk Hogan mask that is like wrapped in a ICE agent jacket.
Yeah.
And so for a minute, there was also like an American bald eagle sort of Uncle Sam looking mask. Like Uncle Sam, which I don't know, like the Muppet character, sort of the big eagle guy. There was like a big eagle head that was looking out of one of the windows. So like, it's kind of a joke around the camp. You know, people are talking about, like, I guess this is their attempt at psyops, but it's kind of just weird and juvenile.
Wow. So
people started calling the Hulk Hogan guy Bobby around camp.
Right.
And like, I believe there is a Twitter account now for DHS Bobby is on Twitter.
Wow. Well, at least we can laugh about that. That's good.
Right. So I would say people are handling it well.
So what has it been like? I mean, they basically gained access to the building. They've given themselves access to go in and out of the building with vehicles. Have they motioned or said anything like they are going to kick the rest of the people out? I mean, I'm sure obviously they want everybody gone, but I mean, how has that tension been like since yesterday? You've got, you know, them back in the building, and then you've got all these people that are, you know, have built pretty elaborate campsites around the area.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely tension that those agents are close by right now. But on the other hand, they also haven't given any kind of official eviction notice. And what they've been doing, and they were doing for a couple days before the, you know, quote unquote raid as well, they've been handing out flyers to people at camp who are mostly ignoring them, that just cites the laws which are being broken or could be broken by continuing to camp. But it's basically just like, hey, just to inform you, you are occupying this land that is on federal property, you know, to which people are like, well, this is stolen land, so it's not really yours in the first place. And, you know, I would say it hasn't been very effective at making people want to leave. But it feels like they're giving out these notices sort of to scare people, although it's not an eviction. So I think that they are cognizant of the fact that they don't have public opinion on their side, which is why they're not sweeping the rest of the camp, which Chloe Udaly and other members of Portland City Council have said they will continue to support the camp that's there. So I think that they're sort of cautious about actually making a motion to clear the rest of the camp.
Yeah. Well, as we've seen in the past, I mean, with Occupy Oakland, there was almost a split in the city elites between the local police, who obviously wanted to come in and crack heads, and the local politicians, who were kind of ambivalent, who at first wanted to kind of like use Occupy Oakland for their own electoral means. But then once they realized it really didn't have any interest in that, they just kind of stopped caring. But I think the police are obviously going to do whatever they want to do at a certain point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like people who are taking the risk to stay at camp are aware of that.
Yeah. So what do you want everybody to know? I mean, what's going to happen now? I almost feel like people think that because the police showed up again, that somehow this is over. And it's definitely not. There's still encampments in L.A., in New York, and there's massive protests that are happening. And this weekend, there's going to be massive demonstrations. So should more people come out? What do you think the next step should be for what's happening in Portland?
Well, as far as Portland, yeah, I think the camp is going to continue, and people can come and see what it's like for themselves. There's been vigils held there every night at 9 p.m., so people can come see that. If they just want to see what's happening without camping overnight, they can. And, you know, I think it's important to just emphasize that this fight didn't start or end at this camp in Portland. Our goal is the complete abolition of ICE. And whether or not there are agents in this particular building, that doesn't change the fact that we're still pushing for this nationwide.
Awesome. Anything else you want to say to anybody listening?
Just to close out, I think it would be appropriate to quote Asada Shakur, who said, "It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love each other and support each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains."
Amen. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us an update, and best of luck to y'all. Stay safe.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Neo-Nazi organizer Jason Kessler didn't have a good week at all, despite winning an entire $5 in a lawsuit in Charlottesville, where he claimed that someone called him a mean name and hurt his feelings. First, the media collective Unicorn Riot released a series of Facebook chat logs between himself and a host of other neo-Nazi and white nationalists. Then a video went viral of Kessler's father screaming at him during an alt-right podcast. As Think Progress wrote, "More than anything, the Facebook logs show that Kessler's anxieties about the rally's attendance, his lack of popularity with other fringe racist groups, and the dwindling size of his own platform, and also his waning influence in far-right media."
But moreover, the logs also show Kessler looking to improve his image by inviting token people of color or even Jews to speak at his rallies in order to help whitewash the very real fascist politics behind him and his associates. Not surprisingly, Kessler points to the format used by Patriot Prayer in Portland, which relies heavily on free speech rhetoric and uses token people of color to distract from the more larger appearance of white nationalists and alt-right figures. Not to be outdone, several days ago, while Kessler was live streaming with neo-Nazi California electoral failure Patrick Little, Kessler's father came into the room, yelling and interrupting the show, clearly angry at his son's politics. While Kessler attempted to take the video down, too many people had already reshared it and placed it up for the world to see. Speaking of Patriot Prayer, this Saturday, we'll see a large showdown between Joey Gibson and his Proud Boys and locals looking to keep such bigotry out of their city. This episode, we caught up with somebody from Rose City Antifa, who gave us a rundown on what we should expect this weekend and why people should come out in mass numbers to resist Patriot Prayer once again. Okay, we're joined here today with somebody from Rose City Antifa. We're going to be discussing the demonstrations that are going on against Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys on Saturday. So just real briefly, who is organizing these events and why are they coming back to Portland?
These events are being organized by Joey Gibson under the aegis of Patriot Prayer. They're coming back to Portland because that's sort of where they got their start. They are a group of provocateurs who come into sort of what they see as liberal bastions or left bastions to incite and to claim that space for the far right. In this case, they're coming back to Portland largely because they see an opportunity here to set the stage for a number of demonstrations during the summer. They want to start the summer off on a good note for them and really claim this space, see that they can have these demos and unite the far right on the West Coast.
Now, that might seem as kind of a bizarre statement, considering the last couple of demonstrations that Joey's organized have not turned out large numbers. They've gotten a lot of bad publicity. Just a couple of weeks ago, Tiny was found with another individual to be driving around in a truck and beat somebody up randomly on the street as they were like shouting pro-Trump slogans. There doesn't seem to be a lot of juice behind them as there was like a year ago. So what is their plan in place to, kind of do a lot of stuff over the summer?
So Joey's, I think, hoping to galvanize the far right on the West Coast. He's bringing in a lot of organizers from around the country. His head of security for this is, Christopher Ritchie, who attended Unite the Right in Charlottesville, for example. He's working with a larger coalition this time in hopes to, I think, bring some energy back into his movement, which has really dwindled from anti-fascist opposition.
Wait, just sorry to interrupt you. So his head of security for the event on Saturday is an individual that was at Unite the Right. What group were they a part of?
I'm unsure if he's with any group, but Christopher Ritchie is one of the people coordinating security with in this case, DHS and Federal Protective Services.
Jesus.
For the rally. And he was in Unite the Right. You can see Eugene Antifa has, you know, a photo of him at Unite the Right. And there's, I think, I'm not sure if it's the League of the South flag, but he's definitely there. He's in full motorcycle armor.
Wait, so he's one of the, because we know that Joey has stated, it's going down, has put a video out of this, but Joey has stated on his live stream that he is working with the Department of Homeland Security, because I guess that's what libertarians do, you work with the deep state, to provide security for this event. So this individual that was at Unite the Right, he's in those talks with the DHS?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. I mean, that's a pretty disgusting lineup of forces there. What else?
Yeah, and it's not the only connection between Unite the Right and Jason Kessler and Joey Gibson. Uh-huh. In the Unicorn Riot logs, a lot of, you know, Jason Kessler discusses how they think Patriot Prayer can sort of function as a model where they use, again, this free speech idea to come into to both create a broader coalition and sort of disguise the fascism and extreme right viewpoints that they have. And Jason Kessler was also in talks with Joey's right-hand man, Tiny, to speak at the Unite the Right 2.
Yeah, and we know that Tiny has reached out to other, like, explicitly white nationalist groups. Like, he hit up Jeff Ott, formerly of Identity Europa, and congratulated him and thanked him for his group continuing to come out to Patriot Prayer events in the past.
Yeah, he said that he would stand up side shoulder to shoulder with Identity Europa and Jake Ott and stand up for their rights to free speech the same as anybody else.
Right, of course. Well, what else can you tell us about who is coming to these events on Saturday? Because it can't all be white nationalists. They've probably got to have a lot of padding from, like, pro-Trump groups and so-called patriot groups. Who all is attending on Saturday?
It's uncertain whether they will have that padding. For what it's worth, Joey seems to have largely reached out to, you know, coalitions of Proud Boys groups of Proud Boys from the wider area. And that's what we saw at his last rally on June 3rd, that his core group has really shrunk to mainly being Proud Boys. And from what we've seen, he might not have that conservative group to sort of disguise his far-right views as much.
Right. Is that just because you think people are getting tired of all the clashes, or they don't want to be associated with, you know, rubbing elbows with neo-Nazis, or what has caused this degeneration or change in his lineup, so to speak?
I think it's a number of things. For one, I think Joey, as a individual, has alienated a lot of these groups who used to flock to his rallies. I also think anti-fascist opposition and reporting on the numerous neo-Nazi connections of Joey's rally-goers has really driven a wedge between them and the sort of broader conservative movement, if we can talk about that. I think those are probably the two key reasons. In addition, I think the fact that the community has consistently come out and opposed in the streets Joey's rallies has created a level of engagement that a lot of people don't want to match on the conservative side.
Right. Do you have any ideas how many people you expect on their side to come out tomorrow?
Off the top of my head, I don't.
Okay.
I think last year at his June 4th rally, he had about maybe 300 to 500 people. This might be a little smaller, but could be the same size.
Yeah, that was a big demonstration at the time. And, you know, that was right after, a week after, that individual's name escapes me. You know,
Jeremy Christian.
Yeah, murdered two people on a Portland train, and, you know, critically injured one other individual. And that was somebody that had previously been out to Patriot Prayer events in the past. But for those that are listening, why is it important that people come out on Saturday to oppose Patriot Prayer?
It's important that we don't allow Joey what he wants. What he wants to do is come out and really crush the anti-fascist opposition with the aid of the state. He really wants to set the stage for him to be unopposed or less opposed during the summer. He wants to continue to bring neo-Nazis and fascists into our community in Portland. By opposing him, we stop him from these goals. We stop the advance of the right in Portland. We stand up to the state as well. You know, he's working with DHS. DHS is currently trying to evict the Occupy ICE encampment in Portland. I think by showing up, we really reject his views. We reject his ability to, we disrupt his ability to organize. And we, as a whole, set the stage for a really poor summer for him. We continue to split his support, make it dwindle until he's finally irrelevant. More relevant than he is.
Right. I think one of the most frustrating things about people like Gibson is that they just, you know, over and over again, they lie about everything. I mean, obviously that's, you know, kind of cliche. I mean, he wants to be a Republican politician. You know, he's like just a scumbag. I mean, he lies, but I mean, he literally just goes out of his way to just, you know, sow false narratives and just, you know, continuous, you know, lies. I mean, the idea that he is not associated with white nationalists or alt-right people is just complete and utter, you know, bullcrap. I mean, we saw him in San Diego, you know, trying, as he said on his live stream, let's go talk to the alt-right guys and come up with a plan, you know? This is like what he does, and he just continues to try to present a picture of himself as just this, you know, everyday Trump supporting Republican conservative. It's just, you know, utter and complete bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, he had on his live stream a couple weeks ago the folk logo, Fraternal Order of Alt Knights, mm-hmm. which is Kyle Chapman's group, and that group is, you know, very explicitly associated with white nationalism, far right nationalism. It's really difficult to see how his endorsement, Joey's endorsement of that, does not, you know, put himself in the same category as Kyle. Is Kyle Chapman.
Yeah, what's one of the interesting things about that live stream is he was basically giving a talk about how Charlottesville Unite the Right was like basically a psyops by the state to make, as he said, conservatives look bad, when he was promoting a group, Folk, that was out Unite the Right. I mean, came out there, was one of the groups that fought. One of their leaders, Augustus Invictus, was one of the speakers. You know, there's lots of pictures with people with Folk logos at Unite the Right. Again, it's just like this utter nonsense of him pulling it out of his butt, and trying to present it to people and hope that it sticks.
Yeah, but other than, you know, really far right media outlets, a lot of local media has really started to come around to his shtick and see it for the really transparent cover of his far-right organizing and alt-right connections that it is.
Right.
No, very few local media outlets will now say, you know, conservative groups. They will say Joey Gibson's far-right group that has white nationalist and neo-Nazi connections.
Right. And I think the other thing too is that, like, you brought up the Discord, or I'm sorry, the Facebook logs that were recently released by Unicorn Riot. I think one of the big things too that Jason Kessler said, you know, Patriot Prayer is a model, and specifically they saw it as a great model, is because it had, as they said, token, you know, minorities and people of color within it to give it the cover of not being a white nationalist organization. And I think people again and again forget this, and, you know, so many people within kind of, you know, the so-called alt-light use this. People like Milo, you know, use their identities, even though they say they're against identity politics, they use, you know, whatever identities to as a shield to, you know, advance this, you know, white supremacist, patriarchal, homophobic agenda. And I think Patriot Prayer is a good example of that. You know, Gibson being half Japanese and Tiny being Samoan, you know, they very much use those people to, you know, promote an agenda.
Yeah, for sure. Tiny particularly gets tokenized a lot. A lot, several months ago during last summer's demonstrations, we put out an article where we counted, you know, the number of neo-Nazi dog whistles and the number of times that, you know, they tokenize someone on their side, whether it's the trans woman who sometimes organizes with them, or a Tiny to sort of defray accusations of far right connections of neo-Nazism. And it was a pretty high number.
Right. Well, anything else you want to add about Saturday? People are encouraged to come out starting at 4 p.m. If you want to give out the location. I know there's a lot of stuff going on in Portland, but, you know, we really strongly encourage people to hold space and not let these people come into town.
Yeah, so it's 4 p.m. at Terry Shrunk, or no, not at Terry Shrunk, at Chapman Square, across from Terry Shrunk. We encourage people to engage in whatever level they feel they can. So if people need to be blocked up, that's excellent. If people don't want to be blocked up, that's also good. You don't need to be in block at this event. But we do expect some amount of confrontation between the far right and us. So do be prepared for that. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck to y'all.
And now, resistance and repression news. Members of the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, or RAM, organized and carried out a teach-in via Skype in Greece on the upcoming national prison strike starting on August 21st.
Flyers in the neighborhood lived in by a Proud Boy, Russell Schultz, were put up, informing neighbors of his connection to violent far-right groups such as Patriot Prayer. Active rent strikes continue in Hamilton, Ontario, where renters are carrying out a phone zap campaign. See our show notes for more information. And also other rent strikes are happening in the D.C. area and across Los Angeles and California. Banner drops against ICE and racism took place in Athens, Ohio. Other banners were dropped against ICE in Florida. And in Chicago, flyers by the neo-Nazi group Identity Europa were torn down and destroyed. In New York, there was an anarchist-organized solidarity rally with Anna Chambers, a young woman who was sadly and tragically raped by the police and is currently fighting them in court. And lastly, judges have ruled, unfortunately, to allow the Line 3 pipeline to continue. As Unicorn Riot reported, quote, "The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission has been given an official stamp of approval to Enbridge's Line 3 replacement oil pipeline despite massive public opposition. The PUC today granted Enbridge the certificate of need, which is required before beginning pipeline construction in the state of Minnesota. Construction is already near complete in Wisconsin. The certificate of need, however, does not indicate the final route the pipeline will be permitted to take. Until next time, we hope you have an amazing and beautiful weekend. Stay safe. We'll see you soon. This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.